Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and a whole bunch of other interesting subjects. And if you are hearing a feedback right now, I am, so I'm wondering if the rest of our audience is hearing it. Hopefully they can clear that up. So tonight I thought we'd talk about God and justice. And if this is an interesting subject to you, then hopefully you will hang on, because I'm going to see if I can get my board here to get rid of some of this feedback. I'm not sure I can do that.
PBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here.
Okay, we're back. Again, this is Niles McFlower here for Why Life Is, and tonight's show is going to be on God and justice, and I can no longer hear that feedback, so I'm very happy for that. So at any rate, we are doing fine, and let me tell you a little bit about what I mean by justice, because many people think of justice as something to do with a human endeavor, you know, like, I'm going to court to get justice, or I'm going to get the sheriff to get justice, or I'm going to have some kind of intervening by some power or source to get justice. And that's a kind of, I think, for many people, that is a common thought, that you can get justice by enlisting the aid of some outside authority. And the interesting part about this is that in terms of God and justice, you can't, and I know this sounds hard to understand, it's not possible in most circumstances to get God to intervene to obtain what most people would refer to as justice. Now, this is a controversial subject tonight, and I don't think that everybody is going to necessarily agree with me, but that's okay. I mean, this is certainly not the show that everybody agrees with me about on the subjects we talk about or my opinions, etc. But nonetheless, let me explain what I mean by that thought, that God is not going to intervene in most circumstances about what most people consider to be justice. There are some very strong mitigating reasons why the universe.
All this time, what's been on my mind? Am I here or is my head just somewhere else? If I leave, I may lose it all. If I stay, I may not get up if I fall. I'm a fool holding words and nothing good to say. Sleep.
themselves so they don't think they will, quote-unquote, get caught, or some other reasons as well. And they take this bubble gum home, and they chew it, and they give it to their friends, and they spit it on the sidewalk because they're usually people who don't care about that sort of thing. And over a month's time, the bubble gum gets used up, as it might, and nothing seems to take place. They say, gee, I got away with that. Maybe I'll steal something else. But you see, that's just the initial act, okay? That's the action. There is an equal and opposite reaction to that effect in an immediate sense. So immediately, as soon as they stole the bubble gum, set in motion is the equal and opposite reaction. And that reaction may be that a whole bunch of other people that are equally or more so selfish than the person who stole the bubble gum now, for some reason or another, are affected by the theft of the bubblegum in a negative way, making them more selfish and hostile besides, and resistant in numerous ways to the person who stole the bubblegum. Now, the weird thing about it is the theft of the bubblegum now connects that person to all these other bad people. You always wonder why people who are criminals end up having friends and being close with and being involved with other criminals. A lot of people say, well, birds of a feather flock together. There is some of that. But besides that, karmically, they become linked through their criminal actions. And they start doing bad things to one another. In other words, the actions themselves create reactions that connect them to other people. If you're with me so far, you're doing good. That's great. Okay, so these other folks now are all connected and are doing bad things. Now, in the beginning, there was only a reaction equal to the action. Okay? But there is something strange about this karma business, and it has to do with time. The more you separate the time from the space of where the action took place that was against God's thought, or that was a non-virtuous action, the more you separate time from space, the more the energy from the original action begins to multiply as a reaction against the party that did the initial action. So if you wait long enough, and if you're a good enough criminal, you can avoid getting caught and maybe even all the bad folks from doing bad things to you, okay? Then the results are that when at some point it's going to become overwhelming and you're not going to be able to avoid the bad karma. But when it comes back to you, it could be many times worse than the original action was. So stealing $5 worth of bubble gum now becomes theft of $10,000 worth of, we'll say, important valuables the person may have, including money and other things. You say $5 worth of bubble gum could become $10,000? Yes. It's not inflation, per se, like we have in an economic system in capitalism, but it is a compensatory way that the universe was set up so that as time is separated from space, then more and more energy becomes manifested from the initial or original event that was non-virtuous. Now, in reverse, I just want you to understand, this is a two-sided equation now. In reverse, if you take this and you kind of take the converse of it, the result is that if you were to create enough virtue to equal $5 worth of bubblegum, such a way to figure that one out, and that you do some good deeds, the result is what comes back to you as a result of those good deeds over time is an equal amount that the time is happening faster and faster from. So there's less of a delay for good acts, by the way, that means. And you're going to get proportionally more back than you would if than the initial giving you gave with, but not as much as someone who was on the negative side of the situation. So people who are doing bad, terrible things are going to get much worse action than someone who's doing good, because the good is going to come back to them fairly quickly, whereas the bad is going to take sometimes a very long time, but have some severe consequences to it. So good may be only a minor improvement from, in terms of energy, in terms of what a person put out, but doing virtuously dark things, bad things, could take a very long time, could take a whole lifetime or longer, but by the time it comes back, it could be significantly larger and more severe to that person. Okay, so this is God's original thought. God created this whole system because it allows people to function within the framework of God's mind, which is light, within the frame, it's light with what we call right action, light and right action together. And that light and right action is what God would like others to follow. And the system is designed so that people who are doing good things get good things back fairly quickly, and people who are doing bad things do not get the benefit of getting any understanding or consciousness improvement, and instead lose consciousness while they may suffer severe consequences, but much later down the line. And they also are given the opportunity, therefore, to recover themselves if they want to, because they are going to get some pretty bad stuff unless they turn the whole thing around and create enough good to offset some of the bad that they have done, and then that's a good thing. So that's a kind of a grace issue again. God is giving people an opportunity to improve themselves without necessarily being the totalitarian being, making one a visit of the severe consequences or unsevere on an individual basis. It's all basically based upon what we call mechanics and physics, rather than on a judgment as such by God. The original judgment of God is what created it, but God does not have to intervene to establish a balance in this order based upon how I described it. Now, what about, we talked about karma, what about other forms of injustice and justice that do take place? And let me say this, that injustice is usually a result of people unknowingly having committed or unrealizingly committed prior dark acts. That's oftentimes true. There are times when it's not. Now, I know that doesn't sound fair, because you would say, wow, then somebody could have an injustice and they didn't do anything, then why is this karma thing not working out for them folks, you know? And why do bad things seem to happen to good people and that sort of thing? Well, first of all, some good people have done bad things much earlier in this life or an earlier life. So that's you know, you have to use that mitigation as well. However, to be completely straight about this and to get to the bottom of it, good things do sometimes happen, bad things, excuse me, sometimes do happen to good people, because only the good people are capable of dealing with that level of bad. Now, you might say, well, wait a second. Where did you get that one from? Well, for those of you who have some, I would say, Christian background, you might look at this and say, well, did Jesus, who some people think is the Son of God, some people think Jesus was a great being of some kind of enlightenment, some people think Jesus was just a great human who extolled tremendous gifts and virtue. It doesn't matter, because in this context, it's not going to make any difference. Jesus certainly would not have looked like or could have possibly deserved the reactions that he received in his lifetime, short as it was. And one would have to look at that and say, well, there's something off here. Yeah, and they would say there's an injustice taking place. But not really. I mean, many Christians think that Jesus died for the sins of others. Some truth to that, by the way, in my opinion. But regardless, the most important element here is that karma is not the only element functioning in why bad things happen to good people. There's another side to the universe, and that is that while goodness attracts goodness in most common circumstances, as I described in my scenario so far, sometimes goodness attracts bad because the bad wants to attack and destroy the good representing, in a minor scale, God. Now, to people who believe in Jesus as a God, then they would say, well, just that's what's exactly what it means, because Jesus was God. Okay, fine. That's all right, too. I mean, you can go down that road and still say the same thing. All right, so ultimately, we have circumstances where unusually good people can be involved with unusually bad other people, at least in some ways. Not necessarily in a voluntarily transactional way, although that could happen, but in most circumstances, involuntarily, they're attacked. And the bad folks want to destroy the good folks, seeing the good folks as an extension, which they may actually be, of virtue or God's mind, God's light, God's thought. And so they want to get rid of it. And so they are attracted in an odd way, in a destructive sense. You know, the attraction comes from the need or desire to destroy. Want to destroy the villains. Now, in those situations, it's still not an injustice. Now, why not? Why isn't that an injustice? Because those in those situations voluntarily, more often than that, almost always, choose to be in the battle with the dark side to prevent others who are good from being further harmed. They act as a buffer between the dark and the light. And many times they're willing to accept the consequences, which might even be their own death, to protect and to uphold the virtue and righteousness that needs to be upheld for those who do not have the ability, literally, to fight back. So this is the part that is hard for some folks to understand. Now, is everybody that's involved in this a knowing participant? Knowing is a hard thing to say. They may not understand it from the standpoint I just explained it, but they may realize that they are doing something that has to be done and they're doing it for the sake of others, and they accept it as kind of a lot in life responsibility, if nothing less or nothing more. So this is part of what I'm talking about when I say there's qualifications to this question of justice and other things. What happens, then, if someone who is profoundly trying, in the best they can, to fight the evil ones, the dark ones, and they have some understanding of what they're doing, but they still aren't necessarily going to beat or win the situation, or they may not, does God deal with that sort of injustice? Or is karma left on its own, so to speak, to deal with it? Or is there some other mechanism in the universe that is involved to try to deal with these more unusual circumstances? And let me give you some of the ways, and it's not a simple thing, to think about this. As I suggested, God does not want to intervene in most circumstances because free will is a huge issue here. It's a huge issue. But God may intervene in circumstances in which the dark side exceeds the most, we'll say, reasonable and tolerable parts of God's mind as it was made at the beginning of the universe. So when evil becomes outrageous for usually a fairly protracted periods of time against those who exercise virtue and goodness and stand up for it, then you start seeing God's intervention and God's means of, I guess we would call it, enacting some form of justice. Now, the justice may not be exactly like in human terms what we think of. No, it isn't going to be necessarily that, you know, a whole squad of police or something going to come and save you, or that some other powerful source or part of society is going to necessarily intervene. Rather, it's a little more subtle, but it oftentimes has many different angles to it. The justice of God is not so much human justice as we understand it, but it can be just as effective, if not much more so. Let's say each of you out there, is fighting against a certain form of evil for the sake of protecting the goodness in the world and preventing this kind of evil from spreading and being and victimizing hundreds of thousands of relative and innocent people. Now, what is going to happen here? Well, one of the interventions is that we are all basically mortal. We have bodies that, physical bodies especially, that can become diseased and infirm, lack sense, and fail. And that part sometimes becomes accelerated. Now, when it's accelerated through karma, we already got that one covered. But sometimes it's accelerated not because of karma. It's accelerated because the choice of God, sometimes through others that serve with God, that are not certainly at the level of God, provides a means in which those who are profoundly evil have profoundly unfortunate circumstances arise, even though for eons they have escaped many times the results of their own actions, because they seek power rather than consciousness, and they don't really care how conscious they are. They just want a lot of power. But it is possible, because of the mortality of our bodies, that the body can still fail, even in a very evil being. They usually keep their bodies going through power, but interestingly, they give up a bit of consciousness over time as they do that, and eventually that catches up with them. The thing that usually they've been using to keep themselves alive, and sometimes almost completely non-aging alive, becomes a real albatross for them, because they live without much change, and they can't modify themselves too quickly to change, but they have to do so by increasing the level of power greater than the loss of their consciousness. And this starts ending up being an eventual impossibility. It may take thousands of years. I'm not saying that you can't do this for a long time. It's just inevitable it will fail, because ultimately the person does not have sufficient power to keep all of their senses intact and remain conscious enough so that they can truly remain alive in the realm that they're in, which in this case would be the physical realm. Then all kinds of, we'll say, corollaries take place that are difficult to enumerate, because they have such wide-ranging differences. But the person then in that situation has become, we'll say, through no law of karma, but through the law of God itself, a victim of their inability to remain conscious while they seek absurd and obscene levels of power over others, usually. And so this is the way it usually ends up. Now, does that mean that happens a lot? No, it happens very infrequently, because mostly that the people that are fighting evil is very small. Most people don't see evil, much less fight it, and the ones who do are scared to death of it and fearful, and they run the other way. If you're going to fight darkness of any sort, you're going to need to have a constitution that can truly handle it, and not everybody does. Those who have instead a fear, or a number of fears, usually involved with death, but in a struggle with any kind of control and authority issues and many other things, usually fail to be able to continue in the fight against darkness because they have so many difficulties within their personality that they are unable to sacrifice enough and give up enough of whatever they seek or desire to be able to live a truly spiritual life. And that's an unfortunate part of the equation. These tests are good tests because they allow those who are exceptional and great to move into new realms of service. They allow people who are failing in the tests to at least go back and to try to revisit the areas that they earlier failed and is the reason they're presently failing today. Most likely, anyway. Okay. So when we discuss God and justice, then, the justice that God seeks is a world in which the dark side destroys itself, but not the side of light. And God sets the world up in such a way that most of the time, God does not have to directly intervene. Rather, the natural order of how God created the universe works fine. When there's an unusual level of creativity, for evil anyway, on the dark side, and it's being exercised in a very narrow way towards a few, then help usually is needed, but sometimes is not delivered until extremely rash and difficult times when it seems as though all hope is lost. So this can happen and is not infrequent. When it does happen, it just means that part of the overall answer to humans about God and justice is to be able to endure the injustice for a certain period of time and to be able to not cross the line into the dark world in fighting the dark side and rather to remain in an angelic kind of way, a person who is willing to sacrifice love and take right actions when it is needed to preserve God, God's thought, and life itself, which is God's growth. So these are the things that people try sometimes to achieve. And they are the great hallmarks that God is looking for in human beings. Very few people will achieve this at this time, but each one that does can have millions of people stand on their shoulders because they're so well served by just a few great acts of the ones who have enough awareness and consciousness to be one with their Creator, at least in part. Of course, the dark side is not one with their Creator. They're anti that. So they're far from being close. They're actually very far apart. All right, so then when we now look at this question of God and justice, then what is God going to do when a person has many instances apparent of injustice in their life? Let's say you're a black person from the 50s and 60s in southern United States. Well, if you looked at it from that standpoint, you would probably have a very negative attitude for the people who seem to be enslaving you, at least in some vernacular, but not necessarily truly physically any longer, but who had a disregard for your rights and your right to be a human being, maybe even, and was terribly discriminatory. Something to think about is that person, as a black person today, or then anyway, very likely was a, within the last 50 to 100 years, was a white slave owner. Many, many people of black descent in the 50s, 60s were slave owners all the way back to the time of the Civil War. And this is why it's so hard for us to grasp this issue. So what? So the justice that is taking place is that they became that which they hated and abused, and now they live their life in a way in which they overcome that because it's in them, it's part of them, and they give up many other possibilities to lead their life in an exhilarating, we'll say in a way in which it is the most important thing to them to stand up for the rights of not only themselves, but more importantly, of others. And they do so without necessarily enacting violence or destructive means. So it's a great way to see how the system is balanced. And it is. And justice makes a lot of sense when you look at it from the broad perspective. It doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense, though, on a narrow day-to-day basis. And that's where trouble gets into these concepts, is because they don't work all the time. They work within the confines of when they were designed to be able to work. All right. So now, where does that leave us in terms of this general subject? Let's put it like this. From all of the information I've given you so far, we can conclude the following issues. There is no such thing as absolute justice, because absolute justice means that all karmic issues are resolved in the world or on the world, in the world we live right now. Now, you know that's not true. And then, in addition, there is this overriding aspect that God wants us to be free. And so God does not want to be the final decider of the amount of virtue or anti-virtue each person has done or created over a period of their life or all of their life. So we now realize it's potential to say this, that there is really not a justice of the kind we oftentimes think of in terms of God. There is this issue of consciousness and what happens when someone fulfills their life through power and control rather than consciousness. Well, instead of being loving, they become material and forceful. And then the results are pretty terrifying, because it usually leads to the dark side. Even if the person doesn't enter the dark side, they still have many stumbling blocks as they grow older to being able to create virtue in ways that they may seek to do. Really. All right. And then, as far as the ultimate goal of God and justice is that there not be a need for any intervention, because the amount of virtue that each person is creating is enough of an offset against the things that they do wrong in the world, so that their level of creating virtue is on a positive swing. That's a good thing. That's really helpful. And it would be great if we could have that sort of world around us all the time. That's not necessarily the way it is, but it would be great if we did. Now, to get closer to that, which is what the rest of the show is going to be about, we need to modify many parts of our society. I'm going to talk about some of the things that have to be changed if we're going to have what we think to be a just society, but one that is just because of its interaction and its a recognition of God, and that the majority of people in so doing, they themselves can create the justice that's needed. Not through a court of law, or not through a person of great authority, but from a court of reason. And a court where, if you want to call it this, where life itself takes on the part of the plan to carry on justice in all elements of daily living for all things. So there you start becoming aware of a just system for all of life. Now, does this have to do with politics? Yes and no. A just system is not a system of socialism, communism, or hypocrisy, sort of in a semi-dictatorship. What it really is a system which provides for the opportunity for each person to be a great being in themselves, as well as those who are close to them, allowing them to discover and create their own way of being a very profound, we'll say, person who is able, through the way that they have and are treated, to find for themselves the real meaning of life. And as they do this, they create more and more of a just system for things outside of themselves, besides just the things inside themselves. They gain a balance in power to their consciousness and their will, so that the three parts of God's mind are balanced within them, and they live a highly copacetic existence in which it is true for them that the joy of life, the meaning of life, is what prevails almost on a constant basis. And they become impervious to injustice, impervious to evil and darkness, because their only way of seeing any way to proceed is through the light of God or virtue in form. And so this is a natural step for them, much better than the steps that, we'll say, others may supersede in and say, oh, it's better this way or better that way. But it may not be better in any way if you don't have this fundamental issue dealt with and in a way that seems very reasonable to the witness, to the listeners as they stay tuned, I hope. All right, so at this point, I think what we'll do, we will take a break, and when we come back, I will talk more about how all of this works out in terms of, okay, we've got a lot of concepts in this first part of the show, but what do we do with all this? And what does it mean, then, to ultimately have a just society, a just political system, a just life, and a just life for all things? What does that mean? Well, we'll talk about that in its many inquiries when we come back. And we should be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel.
kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about God and justice. And so far I just covered more of the concepts about this, and not really into any practical issues. But I think the rest of the show will be mostly focused on those elements and how we can expect to live a really just, in a just world eventually, and in a justice way or a just way. So ultimately, I'm hoping that by the end of tonight's show, we will have some idea of why this subject has some value and how we can use some of the information to be a benefit in our life. So let's talk about the question of judicial issues. I live in the United States. Many of our listeners are listening from outside the United States with different forms of a judicial system where they may seek to get some kind of justice. And I'll talk about this in a general terminology, because things are different in different places, of course. But in general, human justice, as we understand it, mostly deals with the third part of God's mind. And what is that? That's the part that deals with things, energy, and the material side of life. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a justice system that deals with that particular subject. The real problem is that most injustice does not involve material things. And so we have a system that is designed to deal fairly effectively, at least in the United States and a few other countries and somewhat in different countries, about material things. That person cost me this much money. They took this much from me. They gave this much to others. They did this or that. That cost something in terms of material issues, oftentimes related to or summarized in an amount of money. Okay. Money is compressed time and energy. Okay. But the problem is that compressed time and energy, while you can get money to help you to recover some of the lost compressed time and energy, you can't get money to replace the circumstances under which you could have used the compressed time and energy at the time that the injustice took place. Let me give you an example of that, because that may be a hard thing to understand. Let's say that you had $10,000. Some people might think that's a fair amount of money, but it may not be. You had $10,000, and you wanted to take the $10,000, and you wanted to go help 10 people in some way, $1,000 each maybe in some way in your life. And in so serving them, by not necessarily giving them money, but doing something with them or for them interactively, that would be of service to them and many others. That was what you wanted to use your money for. Well, if you received that money 5 years later, as you very likely could if there was a lawsuit and you tried to recover the money, The results will be.
This is Canadian Emissary of Light, Caroline Ra. Join me each Sunday for Caroline Ra's Spirit of the Dawn here on BBS Radio, Station 1, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern. Meet musicians, artists, filmmakers, healers, and visionaries as they discuss their work, their passions, and their missions to assist with the process of spiritual evolution and the joyful co-creation of positive change. Learn about the magic of raw living foods as I share a seasonal recipe from Spirit of the Dawn Cuisine. Live radio, live food, Sundays here on BBS.
In a place where this would be of any service to them, the opportunities have changed, and to the point where it may not really help. Well, as we know, courts can't turn back time. They can't help deal with how we feel about things. And they almost certainly can't change the thoughts of others that may have been completely, we'll say, wrongly influenced by the darkness that was used against us in the first place. We may get money back, but it doesn't change how people feel or think or whatever. And so a lot of negative things can still become outstanding from what we think of as justice. And that's why it's not God's justice. It's not. You see, our justice system is concerned with only a third of God's mind, and then in an impractical sense, because it doesn't deal with time very well. And a real justice system would have to deal with all three parts of God's mind balanced together, meaning that the payback would be to improve the meaning in life to everything, and especially the service that we could render with any and all people, to a level which was lost during the influence, the darkness of others, and what's taking place today. Now let's look at crime, and that's a whole other thing, but let's look at crime, because I was really talking about things like civil issues up to that point. But let's say someone decides to say, your money or your life, and they stick you up and they have a gun in their hand. You say, you know what? Here's all my money. Okay, they took your money. You didn't get shot. It could go. Now, a lot of people say, well, you can replace that money. Sometime you can. That's true. But in the meantime, the money was going to maybe help a friend get an operation or someone else learn how to make more money for themselves. Or do something that will help humanity in general. Well, that's gone. You've lost that, you see. And even if they catch the criminal went and spent all the money at the races and lost the purse. And there's no money to be had, so they don't have any money. They can't replace the money. And so you've got a really tricky problem here, because the punishment for the crime further punishes the victim. Because the punishment for the crime may be to put the person in prison, and then the victim's taxes go up to pay for the person that they put in prison to stay in prison, and the person in prison still never helps the person that they did the crime on in any way. What would be a better way? Well, I wrote about this in a book called Life's Hidden Meaning, and it really, the better way would be to have the person who committed the crime, as an example. This doesn't have to even involve crimes. This could be issues where there's just civil litigation issues. But have them work with their time and energy to help restore the balance from the destructive acts that they used and they did, and to try to, as much as possible, return the time and the opportunities to the person that they committed the crime against. That is a more just system, isn't it? Now, oddly, God's system does that, but it doesn't work within a single lifetime, usually. And it is riddled with all kinds of ifs, ands, or buts, mostly. And I don't want you to think entirely, but mostly because God doesn't concern itself with the small amounts of human time, but rather is concerned about life on a stage of growth so much larger that it doesn't intervene again, because more harm than good would come from its intervening, instead of allowing the person that received the injustice and the person who did the injustice to try to work this out themselves. With karma usually being the instrument most often effectively used. Now, that being said, why then have not human beings created institutions and laws and methods of implementation that would do some of this justice? Why not? And the reason is that most of the legal system, and most human beings in general, have too low of a consciousness to be able to understand how to make a system that would really work and that would avoid most of the pitfalls of the system that is significantly and most of the time failing. That's the answer. And if you really want to get to that bottom line answer, you've got to almost change the entire society that we live in and the values we place upon justice and money, and not look for only material outcomes. It means the courts have to change their attitude. There has to be more equity and less law. There needs to be a system in place in which both sides are figured in any kind of significant lawsuit where the person or people involved are wanting more justice, and if it's a criminal act, it almost has to be part of the criminal penal code, that criminals have to, in some ways, and be part of and actually implement a recovery to their victims, and it has to be more than, in most cases, money. And you could say, well, how many victims are going to want to have anything to do with those that are, you know, committed by the crimes of others? Well, that may be true, and you can't force a victim to be victimized again and again by some other person who may be prone to doing it. But there are still ways that the person can, through third parties and in many other ways, help to give back the time and energy that's lost and to preserve and improve upon that which the person, because of time, an opportunity loses so much of. This is a fascinating subject, I know, and you probably didn't think it was going to get this complicated when we started, because God and justice are just three words. How did it get all the way over to here? Well, because that's what it's about. It's not so hard. It's not so easy to understand it. Maybe it's not so hard either. I hope not, but you know, I hope it isn't hard. Okay, so now, okay, so we can change the legal system in part, to improve our sense of justice. What else do we need to change if we're going to really improve justice? And the most important thing, well, there's two other things that I would call the most important. The first is the educational system, as we know it today, in this country, in the United States, and also throughout many parts of the world. And then we also need to change what I would call the spiritual, philosophical, religious basis on which people function and act. And we'll get to that in a second, but let's go ahead and start with the question of education. Now, I'll go for a few more minutes, talk a little bit about the education issues. We'll take another, I'll give you a little time to think, and I'll tell you something about some stuff that we make and stuff. But let me get to this. Education, and what's wrong with education, is based upon the needs, unfortunately, of the people who are doing the teaching and educating to meet their own goals rather than the goals of those of the students, who oftentimes are children, but even if they're not, to develop in their minds the ability to think, the ability to reason, the ability to find truth through concepts and challenging them, and the ability to understand, disseminate Hugh's knowledge, but at the same time not replace consciousness with knowledge. This is pretty much what education should be doing, but it isn't, because most of the people involved in education, that are the adults and teachers, etc., have a need for a power and control issue, have a need to do their job in a non-creative way, because creation takes so much additional effort. So they're lazy, and they don't, you know, they'd rather read a book in front of a group class than to help people to ask questions intelligently that they don't understand, or that they find contradictory to other things, so that they can challenge and learn together to find truth in most of what they investigate. All right, so this is the deal. If we're going to have an education system that's a lot better than where we're at, we need to make some really, really big choices and changes from the present model, which is based, again, on this business of materialism and doesn't have in it enough of the spiritual elements to be able to bring people to the point where they are truly independent in their actions and thought, and have a much grander approach to their life, because they have dealt with their education in a new and different way. And therefore, when it comes to justice, those that seek justice seek it first for others. And when they do so because they understand what it is that's missing from the way that these others are being treated. And they themselves don't want to be treated that way, but they also find it intolerable to allow others to be so disruptively treated. So that's part of the package, and we're going to come back to that, the question of how we can change our educational system to really be what it should be, to be this great thing that we all would love to have, and how it can improve justice around when people have an education that first extols the ability to be free thinking and then moves on to the ability to be inclusive in their dealings with all others. Right, so let me tell you a bit about some of the Phi Chi stuff, the Phi Chi products. I'm going to talk about them in general. What is Phi Chi? Phi Chi is the science of being able to move energy in and out of places in our bodies. It's not just the physical, it's the astral or emotional and the mental and the acid. Move those energies out of places that they're too densely congealed and too, unfortunately, numerous or amounts of energy that is not in movement, and that's causing, which it does do, chi, the energy, to become, it's life energy, to become anti-life. It reverses the very nature of the energy. And this is that, you might say, well, how would that happen? Well, every center that is called a minor center, where this energy can get stuck. It's the same centers, the same places that you can get stuck on the outside with acupuncture, except that it really is taking place inside your body. The acupuncture just tries to get close enough to the minor center that is being dealt with to have a slight effect on it, and then that slight effect moves on to effect on one of the major chakras, which is like there's seven major centers. There's hundreds and hundreds of minor centers in our body. Okay, so this whole thing, you know, the science of Phi Chi, is to use mostly plants, but in some cases a few other naturally found minerals, to allow the energy to move easily and safely away from the places where it's accumulating into areas that it doesn't, that have too little energy and may be in a state of dying. So it kind of balances this out in this way. And Phi Chi is a science of how to do that with a host of hundreds of different plant substances, plants, with each plant having dozens to hundreds of substances it's composed of. It's a huge number if you factor all that out. And Fai Chi tried to take the correct plants and put them together in a certain way that allows this energy to flow in a much safer and healthier way within the body, because qi is the energy of life as long as it's moving. When it stops moving, it becomes the energy of death. Yeah. You don't want that energy. If you are too close to dark energy a lot of your day, in others and in various parts of your contact with the life around you, the result can be, and this is not a good result, that you have so much retained energy in some places and not enough in others that you become very ill, maybe deathly ill. And you can take the right combination of plant energies to start moving the energies out of places where it's clogged together and into places where there's just virtually no energy to be had. And then the person suddenly picks up and they start saying, yeah, I have spring-waked up, I feel great, thank you very much. So this is the science of Fai Chi. When it comes to pain, like Fai Chi Jizik takes us to another level still in dealing with what are known as demonic energies that transmit the sense of pain to a part of our brain, the hypothalamus. And when it does that, when we discover that we are in pain, we don't know if it's because there's too little or too much energy, and maybe even specifically where it is being happening. We have some general areas sometimes, but not enough to be totally accurate. And the science of Fai Chi does it for you. You don't have to figure it out. It figures it out for you by using, we'll call it mathematical ways that chemistry acts within our body to improve our centers and to block further delivery and building of energy within us. While at the same time, it may do the reverse. It may allow that there isn't enough energy someplace, and it brings that energy in. It acts like a magnet. And proper amounts of energy in. So you get a double effect, and it can quickly lead to the resolution of a number of things that we get signals from our senses telling us. We sometimes ignore. All right, so Fai Chi Jizik is one of the Fai Chi products, and you can get Fai Chi Jizik at buyjizik.com, and when you go there, you'll see that the bottles are on sale. Like the 100 tablet bottles now are selling for $30 a bottle. That's small, because they're so expensive to make the ingredients. It's got 100 tablets in it, and you do take a lot to begin with, and then you start cutting down, but it deals with very bad chronic problems, so it's probably worth trying. Does it work on everybody? No. Nothing works on everybody, as far as I know. But does it work on a lot of people? Yeah. And the more you're healthy, the more you take care of yourself, the better it will work. So that's a good thing if you're living a healthy life. Now, also, I should want to mention this, that if you want to pick up Fai Chi Jizik and use it, you should be thinking about it in terms of more long-term use if you have a chronic problem, or short-term use if you have a minor but bothersome pain. You can use it either way. And in both cases, it will do the job. It lasts for like 6 to 8 hours, and you can take anywhere from 1 to 4 doses or more in a day. That's a lot, by the way. And you can take just a few pills, or you can take up to 10. Now, it depends on how strong the pain is, too, and how long you've had it and how much severity it has. More severity means more pills taken more often. Less severity means less pills taken less often. That's pretty simple to do. It's not that hard. And it's not going to hurt you to take this stuff, because unless you have a severe allergy to one of the minuscule amounts of a specific plant that is in there, you're not going to even notice anything other than you're going to start feeling just a lot better. And that's a good part of it. Buy Chijizic at buychijizic.com. If you want to find out more information just by calling, you can call 602-431-5762. That's 602-431-5762. All right, so let's get back to tonight's show, God and Justice. We were talking about education. And education is a tool for gaining justice in the general population. When people gain education, they learn how to think better. Their consciousness may expand, their givingness may expand. And with the proper kind of education, they become disconnected to their astral nature and their desires being running the show, so to speak, in place of their mental body or mental mind. That's a difficult thing to have happen, and if it does, then you're going to do some time trying to get that switch back. Nonetheless, having that said, it's pretty good to, if you can, you want to have the ability to learn as much as you can about anything and to question everything and to recognize that the present state of human knowledge is in the single percentile as being really very accurate about any subject. Beyond that level of accuracy, you start dropping rapidly in what people understand virtually about everything around them. So, yeah, you really want to develop your consciousness. If you examine the way others are thinking and speaking, it may then allow you to see a more just way for you to do the same with them. And you may not want to be part of a particular group at any time who is doing this. Remember, groups, spiritual groups are not necessarily people who know or identify themselves as being a spiritual group. It's just people who are doing virtuous things and decide to help each other to do virtuous things while each of them is responsible for their role in whatever it is they're doing. It's not a collective consciousness. It's an individual consciousness of each person, but working with the assistance of others when they get kind of sticky or problematic. And it's a really good system because it's designed to be to increase creativity without restricting freedom and without forcing people to become or do something that is not their choice to do, really. So you want to consider then when entering into an educational system that people have huge amounts of freedom of thought, the ability to question at all times the statements of teachers and the actions of teachers. Question at all times whether this is a good or bad thing that they are choosing to do. You should have pictures showing you get along with this creature if you can get them. And the most important part of this is that once someone has really learned to think, they are on their way to living a just life and helping others to do the same. But you might say, well, everybody can think. Well, they can think about something, maybe. But learning how to think using the standards of a great science is very hard to do, actually. It's not an easy thing. And in those situations, it's always better, if you can, to create an environment in which people can continually learn from each other, and they can also challenge their instructors if necessary. And there needs to be a sense of fairness and justice in the classroom, if there is such a thing as a classroom, or in the learning model and procedure under which people subjected, if you want to call it that, or are brought to. Now, why is justice so important in these situations? Why can't you just have the mean old teacher with the switcher stick in her hand, whacking your knuckles and telling you, you're going to do it my way or the highway, and this is the way to do it, and that's all there is to do it, and you don't like it too bad, and you're going to be tested on this in 5 minutes, and if you don't pass the test, I'll clobber you a few times. Well, that sort of thing vanished over time because it was so abused. But it's still there in some respects because we've relied so much on others to build and think and control our school systems that we don't really recognize some of the issues that we need to address right away. And that's what I talked to you about. Okay, so now when you look at this whole situation and you see how this is turning out, you can see where it's headed for. If you're going to have a situation where justice is going to take place in the classroom and the teachers are actually students themselves of how to teach and learn and help others to learn, you're going to have a creative system. You're going to have people who demand justice throughout their life and who are not going to follow in the steps of an unjust system. And what will take place then is the replacement of a godless educational system with a system in which consciousness becomes primary and knowledge becomes secondary. And the ability to understand our Creator, the ability to understand each other, the ability to treat each other in a just fashion becomes the primary emphasis. Now you could say, well, what's so big about that? I mean, you know, we're going to have unruly kids then. They won't, they'll all be thinking instead of listening and being taught. Well, yeah, but we're also going to have a system in which people can sense injustice and do something about it, both on a collective and on an individual level. And they work together to fight back against the tremendous number of injustices that occur all over the place. And now we're dealing with the first and second parts that of injustice that I was talking about earlier, that courts are virtually impotent to deal with. They just have virtually no ability to do anything about the tremendous levels of injustice that occur on a regular basis within them, and they deal with these petty issues of, well, we'll give you so much money in 5 years or 10 years and you'll be happy, right? Or you'll settle for it, because most things are settled. Or if it's not in that realm, if it's in the criminal divisions, the criminal areas of life, you can see how there would be so few criminals if you had an educational system in which people were free to think, free to question, free to gain consciousness or understanding, and then were given the knowledge necessary to apply this grown consciousness from being in a great educational system in ways in which they don't need to steal from others and be an act of injustice against a society, they would become a supporter of justice instead of one on the dark side. Wow, that is not a bad thing at all. All right, so if we can create a system like this, and we can, by the way, then we can deal with the most prominent elements of what's wrong, and we can help out. Now, in the meantime, we still have a whole generation, several of them, that have been confounded by bad educational systems, terrible justice systems, and a lack of virtue. And this is unfortunate because without the virtue within our society, we run amok and things become toxic and very negative. The next step then is to, as I suggested, to quell, let's say we correct all the educational things, and we can do that. We still have the present young adults and adults, and maybe older adolescents even, who have it contaminated through the earlier parts of what's wrong with the system. How do you change that? Better prisons. Let's lock them up. No. Now, the best thing to do is to move on to the principles of, we'll call it, justice in God. When people have some level of belief structure, as well as some level of operative, we'll call it, spiritual life, and understand God in its fullness, they then give up their ways of trying to cheat the system, trying to steal, trying to get something for nothing, trying to be destructive to God, because they aren't angry at God anymore, and trying to be of greater service to others and live their life in ways to develop a new sense of meaning, new meaning in life, the hidden meaning. And that hidden meaning comes from consciousness or givingness and the ability to help others to co-serve and together, to do it in a group but on an individual level. And so this is where individuality and groups come together. And I talked about that in prior shows. And there's no conflict between that, except in the minds of men, but there isn't any really in the way the system was created by God. But that was an earlier show. And so for tonight, we're just talking about, okay, we've got that part down, but we don't necessarily see that religious institutions, spiritual foundations of life, shows like this maybe, books that I've written and many other people have written in articles, all those things come to bear on and to produce a new kind of existence, a new kind of life for the adult population, us. We can then withstand the injustice because we can stand together against it. And we can then not fear darkness and evil, but we can relish in the fact that we live a life of light against the light, against the life of injustice and darkness. Yeah, we may still have courts and we still might have other forms of justice around us, but we live for the greater good of all and not for the individual losses or gains. And those individual losses or gains that many times cannot be resolved through the present quote-unquote justice system, we seek a higher and better principle in the use of all of our energies that is tremendously multiplied or factored into by others who seek to work together with us, and then the whole system balances better. And this is why it's beneficial to work together in a spiritual group or in a religious institution under spiritual principles, or just with others who think that way and may not even identify itself as a spiritual group. It doesn't really matter, because if you're creating light in the world together, you're doing so more effectively than you would be as an individual in most circumstances, and especially if you're dealing with any form of evil, because evil is very toxic and very difficult to deal with on an individual level. You need to take it on with others so that they are shoulder to shoulder with you and you're not alone, because that's a dangerous place to be. Dangerous from your own emotional and mental health, and dangerous from the standpoint that you're probably not going to win. And winning in this case means bringing more of God into the world and getting rid of some of the evil. Losing is the opposite. It means the ultimate destruction of life and the meaning of life and of God itself, which is the growth of life. And so we have this whole thing really contingent upon means that you really look at every person that you have contact with who is seeking to create light in the world as a great asset and someone that you can depend upon and with to produce and create the greatest of all things, a growth in life that supports light in the world. Wow. And destruction in some circumstances to evil, if not its own destruction coming from its confinement in an astral realm away from the physical, where it will destroy itself. So these are the things that we have the capacity to do. Now, can we do these things on large enough levels to deal with some of the very serious, most serious kinds of destructive things going on in the world? Well, yeah, we actually can. We have the ability to collectively affect, through policies or the political system itself, those people that represent us, if we're in a republic and democracy together. We can allow this to take place so that it moves in a direction that is a benefit to all people. You know, and if you think something is not going very well, you can get together with others to try and change the system as quickly as possible to avoid more evil in the world from expanding. So you may not be able to change it within even months, but you certainly can change it within years of time. And in some cases, depending upon how close there is an election, so to speak, you might be able to do it even faster than that. But you do need to find people of like kind in thought and work with them, not just in a political way, but in many ways, where their creative energies and yours merge to produce a positive result of light in the world. There are many different ways of doing this. The more ways you find, the more your meaning in life will increase. And this is a really good system. Now, does that mean that all parts of our quote-unquote justice system will immediately change? Well, far from it. As a matter of fact, it's more likely than not that there will be some resistance in the political, that political, in the justice system as it is right now, well, the political one too, because there's so much darkness already in it, it doesn't want to change because it wants to continue to grow in darkness. So that's going to be a bit of a challenge. But that doesn't mean, well, things won't get better. It just means that particular system may not get better as fast as some other parts of society might. And maybe to expunge all the problems, you have to take years to reach to and get to those people who are dark and sometimes have enormous amounts of power and control that can be quite destructive. That's where you have to really put yourself into the situation and recognize its issues. So there's no question. There's no question at all that it is a serious concern that everybody should take and be willing to put themselves and their life in proportion and sometimes jeopardy to establish the real changes that are going to be necessary. Now, in a spiritual sense, it's very difficult for people to sometimes agree on a system of spiritual thinking, sometimes referred to as different religions, but not always. And because of this, we have separated or segregated ourselves. And I don't think there's any place more profoundly like that than here in the United States, where it seems like with all the plethora of religions that we have, they all think that they have the only way to get to God or something like that. Or many of them do, not all of them. But some of them, and certainly a large number, have this dispelling and sometimes completely, I will say, using my own judgment, incorrect view, that only their religion is the right religion, and only their religion, if performed according to their rules and their whatever, edicts and canons, etc., will if followed, will produce a godly life and one in which you can reach some attainment here and maybe in the hereafter. So it's and of course, I don't follow that. I think that that is one of the most incorrect beliefs and thought processes. But and it would it makes such little sense if you think about it. If there's 7 billion people in the world, and there's a total of 2 million people that think this particular way in a specific religion, even if it's 200 million, it's a very small proportion of the world. Well, what about everybody else? They have a different viewpoint. And then you might say, well, what about the agnostics, the people who doubt God, and the people who are atheists who don't believe God could or should exist or whatever? What about them? How do they find any meaning, and how do they find God? Well, it's going to be difficult for the atheists to find God, but they still might. They should certainly work on leaving the door open if they can. The most important issue here is not whether you believe in God. It's whether you believe in virtue or light in form, which is the thought of God or spirit around us. If you can find spirit, then you can lead a spiritual life, even though you say, well, I don't believe in God. Well, it's kind of contradictory, but you actually can do that. It's possible, and I think I've known people who have. They have some of the quirky contradictions in their life and in their thought process that sort of thinking does lead to, and sometimes they look a little hypocritical. But nonetheless, it's many ways better than the opposite. Someone who says, oh, I definitely believe in God, but it's only my way or the highway. Those folks I would rather avoid, actually, because their method and their message is contrary to God's. God's message is it does everything and implores everything in the universe through its own original thought to be free and free to choose and not to be forced to believe through some converted fear or whatever in only a specific avenue of being close to our Creator. So I see that as really standing in the way for many people to finding God and to, unfortunately, finding and living in, helping to live in a just system. They are intolerant, and therefore, by nature, the intolerance of the mind leads to injustice. Let me talk about that for a few minutes. I didn't cover that earlier in the show. Why does intolerance lead to injustice? Because part of justice is that each person has the right to make their own mistakes. Each person has the right to do things in ways that are not necessarily correct. But tolerance allows that to take place because that's what God does. God doesn't say, as soon as you do something wrong, I'm going to drop a 100-pound lead weight on your head. No. It might take a lifetime before anything will come out of that. And you might undo it anyway through creating many good things that challenges and undoes it. So God has constant grace. It's constantly deciding to allow much time and space to be separated for us to find God, find justice, find a tolerant way of thinking and living. Intolerance is the opposite. I can tell you this. The contradiction in terms that some religions take, such as some more radicalized parts of some religions saying that if you don't belong to our religion, you should be murdered. And especially if you used to belong to our religion and have left it, let's kill you. That is a level of intolerance that is truly evil. It has a disregard for life itself. And God has the greatest regard for life, so it has a disregard for God. It's an ungodly religion, even though they claim they're doing it in God's name. I'm going to kill you in God's name, because you gave up our religion, and furthermore, you're another religion that's a no-good one. We don't like it, so I'm going to kill you. Well, I mean, this is unfortunate, say the least. And how are you going to have a just system? How are you going to have any justice if you have that kind of thinking? In the countries that do have that kind of thinking, you can look at their justice system and see how it proves my point. Maybe overly so. There's no justice when there's intolerance. When the intolerance is absolute and extreme, there's extremely and absolutely no justice in that civilization or society. Wow. And you can see why changing this concept about God in society in general and making it a more spiritual society will bring more justice into the society, now that I've gone through all those explanations at least. And it should start making a lot more sense to you. And you can see how bringing together an education for the younger folks, and that's not to say older folks can't get educated as well, I'm just saying in general, that's usually the way it works. And then combining that with a more spiritual focus by everyone, including the older people in society, can lead to a more just society, one that doesn't need a God that is a law giver and law enforcer. You remember in Judaic, earlier Judaic thought, God was the law giver. And, of course, Moses, in a sense, was one of the law receivers. There were other law receivers as well. But the problem is that that got mixed up with God being the law enforcer. Yeah. And with the mighty hand and the single blow of God. Okay. That's a problem. And that is a problem, in my opinion. I'm going to step on everybody's toes tonight. Of religion, because the religion makes these things up to give the power of God to the people who enforce the religion, who claim they're doing it in God's name. So if you break the tenets that the religion has, you have broken against God, and then it's enforced, of course, by the people in power who claim to be the priests, the bishops, the rabbis, or whatever. And they take it upon themselves to be an instrument of terrible authority. Less of that in some places, in some religions today than others, but there's still some parts of some religions that do enforce that very severely. That frightens me. It should frighten everybody, because tremendous injustice takes place when that happens. People are murdered. People are denied basic human rights. Women may be discriminated against in a severe way sometimes. Or some other kind of group in a society. In some cases, it's homosexuals. Go after them. Yeah. Or it may be people with a certain political leaning. Believe it or not, that's true. And or it could be people who do not accept the God of that particular religion in that specific way. Too many things really add to the poisoning that these things have had over time. All right. So, what can we do more of to prevent this from happening? I really believe, and especially in terms of the question of religion, that the books should all be opened about the tenets of each religion. I know that sounds cruel, maybe. I believe in comparative religion teachings, where people get to learn about all religions from a relatively young age, and adults certainly have the opportunity to do so. It's rare you find many people studying this, except in a philosophical sense within a college. It's not too often you see it. Some religious schools actually offer it, but they do so usually with a twist. The twist is their particular kind of religion is always on top. Every other religion has some quirky thing that's wrong with it. That's not very fair, and it's not just. Now, this kind of comparative thought allows people to start saying that religions more than made by God are made by people to try to understand God, which is okay, it's good, but it's through their eyes, with their own prejudices, their own hypocrisies, and sometimes their own need for power and control over others. So in those circumstances, we have then grand injustices. And the way to get over it, in my opinion, would be for people to really learn about all of the peculiarities, strangenesses, prejudices, whatever, and greatnesses of all the different religions in the world, including the parts of some religions that are sects of tremendous hostility and sometimes outrageous behaviors that virtually ignores the true meaning of spirit and spiritual and God's thought, and is about as close to God as a rock, probably less close. So, I mean, it really gets into some very negative feedback places that these people are into from a distorted, convoluted religious viewpoint. Yeah. Now, some of you may be thinking, oh, he's just talking about Islam. I'm not. I'm talking about, really, almost every religion under the sun. Islam has some really radical parts that are scary, no question about that, and incorporates some of the many things I've talked about, but it isn't the only religion. I mean, I'm telling you, every religion has some of this, a little bit, and some have a lot, because they're created by people. God created everything, in a sense, but by giving freedom and free will to human beings, and then human beings themselves create religions like God, there you go. That's how people say, well, God created this religion or that religion. God made a compact with Abraham. And he said, go forth and thou shalt, you know, do this and that. And then he gave the rules to Moses. And that and that. Well, yeah, I got it. It's still those people seeing it that way. Did God make an agreement with Abraham that the Jewish people shall be his favored group? And as long as they do what he wants, you know? What does he want? Well, it's a he, first of all, and that's scary in itself. But, I mean, it, as God, the being of God, wants virtue. It wants light in this world's form. And it wants it here through the workings of humans and all of the life, interacting together as a single unit. And that's really what it seeks. You can say, oh, yeah, how do you know? You're just another religion. No, I'm really not. I give you my opinion of what I think God's here for, but I'm not telling you how to find that out. I'm telling you to think about it. I'm telling you to find it out for yourself and come up with your own ideas about it. I'm here to help people to think and to make suggestions about ways things might be, with always the caveat that I certainly can and sometimes am wrong. Yeah, no question about it. So humility is probably the most important attribute we can really strive for in our spiritual life. It's humility. Humility is the thought and actions of souls. The assumption that one is mistaken when faced with an alternative viewpoint. Humility is the greatest of all the great ways of living. And through that, justice can be found. Now, you could say, oh, but a humble person has absolutely no chance against the unjust because they seek power and to destroy that person. How is it that that can be prevented? Well, sometimes it can't be. Sometimes people are killed or their life is ended. But in most circumstances, the humble person gets the help that I spoke of earlier that rarely comes from God. Really. This is the remarkable part of this process. Humility is the way. Not having a religious viewpoint that gives you the right to go kill people or to be prejudiced against them in some absurd way. It gives you the ability to directly have contact through usually intermediate sources with God. I said usually. You could actually have direct contact with God if you are humble enough. Now, what is enough? Well, enough humility means that no matter what the circumstances are, and I don't care what they are, you doubt your own thoughts and your own needs to be right and replace it with the need to understand, to help others to find understanding, and to work and live and care together about everything that is good around you. This is what I mean when I speak of the humble person. This is the way to find real justice in life. And to the humble person, no matter what happens, life ultimately is just. Because the act of humility is its own reward. It leads to a closeness with your Creator that cannot be achieved in any single and sometimes collectively other way. It's tough to be humble. And the more you have great gifts, you know, intelligence or creativeness or whatever, the more you have to enforce, sometimes an artificial enforcement, of a need to be humble and to listen to others. Do you think that others have as good or better ways of understanding? Mm-hmm. To respect their thoughts, their actions, their interactions as part of our Creator. Whole life. Even the most obnoxious has some redemption to it. Humility does not mean that you're fooled by or give up all of your ability to prevent evil from destroying. You don't do that because you're humble. Some people get that wrong. And they say, yeah, feed me to the lions, I'm ready. You know? I'll turn my cheek and just feed me to the lions. Someone that came from the meek inheriting the earth or something, I think they inherit if they are cremated, they inherit a plot of ground somewhere. But the real problem with that kind of thinking is it's misplaced humility. It's not real humility. Real humility is understanding where the other is and recognizing that they can be right and you can be wrong. Now, should you doubt the words and actions of darkness and evil? No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting that when you see evil, you bring it up and you listen to others' opinions, and if they have one different from yours, you listen to theirs and think that maybe yours is wrong to see if who is right. You can't determine truth until you have humility. And then truth will be determinable by the concepts either supporting each other or failing falsity. And we, of course, have many shows on that, so I'm not going to go into the explanation of that. That will take a lot more time than we have left. So there is a very good way to approach circumstances where someone might have a different viewpoint on someone you think is evil, but you don't necessarily accept only your own position. You say, well, I can be wrong. Maybe they're not evil. Maybe I'm wrong. I think they're evil, but they're not. Let me see. Tell me how I can better understand this. And if they are humble themselves, they can explain it to you. And even if they're not, maybe they're really arrogant. If they're right about their position, they'll be able to support it with concepts that will not be contradictory, and therefore they'll be upheld by truth. Well, that's good. That's one of the ways to get to that position. And so allowing someone to explain their viewpoint is a good thing, even though it runs contrary to what you think is correct initially, and then you accept that they are right. You don't just accept that they might be or possibly. Well, okay, you're right. Now let me understand how you're right so that I have an open mind and I can think and listen to you. And then you can come back with your own questions and thoughts and answers. And the result could be that you've either uncovered something that you've misunderstood or you help somebody else to do the same. In either way, both are winners. And getting closer to both truth and closer to higher consciousness or understanding. Wow. That's really a good thing. So ultimately, if we're going to expand justice, we need to function more on a soul level, which has to do with this humility thing. And if we function at the soul level and others do not, then allowing them to explain themselves provides them the impetus to see their own errors. It doesn't prove they will, and they may deny it. But it also gives each of us the opportunity to question our own truth and our own understandings to make sure that we're still in a position where our thoughts are not contaminated by our desires or any kind of darkness. We challenge ourselves every day, and therefore we walk and live in the light, and we do so without having to put down or discriminate in some way against others. Because that's really what people do sometimes. And instead, we accept others as being souls like ourselves. And if they're not truly souls anymore because they really are badly evil, then we at least give them the grace that they deserve to someday get better and at the same time protect ourselves and others from that evil because we can recognize it and do something about it. Most circumstances, we don't have to do a lot to harm anyone else that is evil, unless they are directly trying to harm others themselves, and then we may have an obligation to defend others, even with their own lives. We call that war. And some people call it the police department or whatever, but we do it all the time. We just don't recognize what it really means and why we do it. Now, some people are totally against war. You know, they believe that all forms of war are a form of way of being against God. They have some decent arguments about that, you know, but they may be part of the Friends Society or whatever. The point is that they don't necessarily lack consciousness about the issue. That's their general belief. Some of them are open-minded enough to challenge that belief at times and also to think in other ways. Others don't. They just say, this is the way my religion is, I believe it, and that's all there is to it. That form of egotism, because it's a closed-mindedness, will almost certainly lead to a lack of humility, and that's the real problem. So the problem isn't what they actually think so much, or what their religion dictates, but it is in the curtailment of free thinking, and curtail the free thinking in the individual thinking it, and also in allowing others to have different thoughts without being discriminatory, separative, and in some ways hostile towards those of differing thought, especially if it's in a religious or spiritual fashion. All right, we're running out of time here. Let me give you some basic formulas here for dealing with God and justice. When we are leading a just life, we will not necessarily lead the most easy or we'll say comfortable, some people like that word, life we could ever live. The formula for this is the more you seek justice, not just for yourself, but for everyone, the more your life is going to become tough and rocky and difficult. If you don't want difficulty in your life, probably being a friend of those in need And friend of all those where there's injustice will only produce a very difficult life for you. But not one without meaning, and not one without great attributes. It's just a warning. Be forewarned. That's what you can expect. Now, if you seek justice only for yourself in your life, you may achieve some limited goals if the justice is through the justice system, because that deals mostly with materiality in the third part of God's mind, and it may at some point reward you in some meager way, but not without losing some level of consciousness and some level of freedom to gain so much from one side of God's mind only. That's a big problem, or mostly, I should say. And that's what's wrong with the justice system. People don't come out whole no matter what way they go about it. You know, there are better ways, but the better ways take a kind of longer period of time. And you're not always capable of taking those better ways. If corruption is being used against you, and the corruption involves the legal system itself, then the only thing you can do is fight within the legal system, but not for your own rights, but for the rights of the world. And if you do that, you're on the right track, but remember, that could be the bumpiest of all roads. So don't expect it to be an easy one. Okay, next thing. If you want to have God and justice in your life, you need to be willing to help educate our young so that this is going to be a future for our world. And then you need to inspire and spiritually, we'll call it, lead, preach, dispel more adult-like people into a life of humility and service, of creating virtue and light in the world, fighting evil in many different areas, not just in the justice system, and maybe least in the justice system, and a willingness to sacrifice whatever needs to be sacrificed to make the world more just. It may involve places you never heard of. It may involve people you've never understood or knew. It may involve all kinds of things that seem contrary to who or what you are at the present time. But you'll grow into becoming something greater by seeking that the world be a just place. Also, you may become embittered in the process in any of these situations I'm speaking of. Don't let it become a lifelong issue. A little embitterment will happen from time to time because being human means we are not perfect. And so sometimes our feelings will come contrary to our thoughts and we will feel this. Embitterment is usually a form of anger at those that are doing great injustice without finding an adequate release in ways that are beneficial and that are in some ways, at least semi, if not completely legal. So you want to be aware of these issues as I have brought them up just now, because they are kind of like the final thing I'm going to be able to say tonight. And I need you to all realize that tonight's show did not fully cover this subject, because there's all kinds of exceptions that really we just couldn't get into, that are facts that get into areas of people's lives where it's just too difficult without a lot more time to fully understand why certain things happen. Okay, so we are out of time for right now, and I just want you to think about this, and hopefully this will bring a new light into your life. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.